fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it, my friends. It is a post-Monday celebration. Greatest day of the entire week. And boy, do we have a lot to talk to. A lot of things to get to. A lot of things to discuss, to break down, to bring some common sense, rationale, and reason to, like we do every single day. So wonderful to have you along for the ride as usual. This is the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting live out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to the show. Welcome aboard your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every single day. Boy, what a day in court. Now, again, I have said this multiple times, and I have not paid much attention to the entire court case in Washington, New York right now with Donald Trump, because it's really stupid, and it's kind of ridiculous that we even have to pay attention to this at all. And every time they do something, then Donald Trump continues to gain more support, and his poll numbers continue to rise. And right now, he's beating Joe Biden in all the big national polls. He's beating Joe Biden in all of these swing states across the nation. He's beating Joe Biden in the majority of the demographics that they look at in the election season, while they continue to say, well, let's double down and get him even more in the courtroom. And it's kind of ridiculous. I will say, though, and we're gonna not spend a lot of time on this today, but I do find it kind of fascinating, and I'm very encouraged the fact that a vast number of Republican elected officials are showing up to court to actually stand beside Donald Trump and, number one, show how ridiculous this is, but, number two, show a little bit of some unity within the Republican Party. I think this is encouraging. It may be a small thing. It may be, obviously, the majority of Donald Trump, you know, diehard supporters. I mean, the ones that we see there are ones that are potentially on the VP list for Donald Trump, on the short list, with Vivek Ramaswamy. He was there today. Doug Burgum, Byron Donalds, and Speaker Mike Johnson, obviously not on the VP list, but a great supporter of him. Donald Trump Jr. obviously being there for a while. J.D. Vance, who could potentially be on the VP shortlist for Donald Trump. There's a lot of Republicans over the past few days that have been showing their support for Donald Trump. And it may be a small thing, but I kind of like it. I kind of like the support because it shows the solidarity and the unity that we have among Republicans right now, going into an election season when Donald Trump is the head of the Republican ticket, and we have to show that Republicans might actually be able to get along. Now, are you going to see a Liz Cheney there? Obviously not. Are you going to see a Mitt Romney there? Obviously not. But just this little thing, the fact that they would spend some time away from D.C. and actually sit in a courtroom for hours on end that is extremely dull and boring and mind-numbing, and your brain hurts a little bit, and you probably just try not to fall asleep, even though Donald Trump apparently did fall asleep. That, to me, it's just encouraging, and it's kind of nice. Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, speaking after they left the courtroom today, saying this.
Myself, I am disgusted. I'm an attorney. I'm a former litigator myself. I am disgusted by what is happening here, what is being done here to our entire system of justice overall. The people are losing faith right now in this country, in our institutions. They're losing faith in our system of justice. And the reason for that is because they see it being abused as it is being done here in New York. The facts here are very important. Facts are always important in a trial, or at least they're supposed to be. The president's actions in this matter were previously reviewed and no charges were filed. Why is that? Because there's no crime here. Now, 8 years later, suddenly they've resurrected this thing. They brought it back. And why is that? Well, just apply common sense. Everyone can see. It's painfully obvious that we are now 6 months out from an election day. And that's the reason. That is the reason why they brought these charges here and across the country.
All right, so that's Mike Johnson. That was from his Tweety account, where he posted the majority of his speech that he did in front of the podium after they walked out of the courtroom today. And he's completely right. There's some other audio we'll get to later because it's kind of fascinating, both for Mike Johnson, Vivek. Man, I've said this before. Kind of like Vivek Ramaswamy, man. He's a fireball, and he made a bold statement after the hearing today. So we'll do some of that later on the program. Drew Thomas Allen, he'll be joining the show at the bottom of the hour. We'll cover some of that with him. He's host of the Drew Allen Show TV and podcast program, also author of the book America's Last Stand. But I want to shift gears because there is a lot to talk about outside of just Donald Trump, which is really been the focal point of the media lately, and we can't take our eye off the ball. As you know, on this program, we like to cover other issues than just the sexy flavor of the day. We like to cover topical issues and actually legislative issues and philosophical issues, because that's just what we do on the show. So let's get into our What's Trending.
What's trending today?
Because there's some big stuff going on, if you know what I mean.
And I think we're going to make it bigly.
And we have to make sure that we don't miss out on this. So, latest out of the Senate, they're set to vote on, coming up here in the next, few days, week, whenever it may be. But the Senate's planning on voting to disapprove of a resolution that was passed on Wednesday last week from the Treasury Department. Andy, okay, that sounds kind of boring. What the heck's going on here? I want to put this into perspective for you, because this could be the beginning, finally, of the end of the COVID-19 pandemic that we've still been trying to deal with for the last few years. Do you know, and this is a great analogy, I was thinking about this as we were going into the program, you ever have, and I'm waiting for this time when Little Voice of Reason gets this age, you ever have that time when your kids grow up enough to where they can go do some of the shopping for you? Hey, can you pick this up when you're on your way home from school? Or, hey, you have a car, can you go do the shopping? Or, oh, hey, you may not have a car, but the grocery store is down the street, can you go pick something up for me real fast? Really appreciate that. Here's some cash. Remember back in the old days, like back in like the 80s, before we actually, you know, had to worry about our kids being abducted and all this other garbage, when you would hand your kids like a $20 bill and say, here's the grocery shopping list, go get the stuff that you need. This should cover it. And maybe if you have a little bit of cash left over, then you can get a little piece of candy bar or something. And then they come back, and what do you see? You see like the dented cans. You see the can that has no label on it whatsoever, that you don't know what it is. You have boxes that are like tore open. And well, why did you get all this stuff? Well, it was on discount. It's great. How'd you get all these bags of candy? Well, we had a whole bunch of cash left over. And none of the money was actually appropriated to what it was actually intended for. You ever been in that situation? I know it's hard in today's times to try and put that into relation, because we're not allowed to let kids go off and do that on their own nowadays. So for the, I guess, older crowd listening audience here, you might remember those times back in the good old days. Well, the Treasury Department is still spending some COVID-19 funds. Oh, yes. And they're spending from funds from what they call the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds, the SLFRF. They always have to shorten those things. For the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds. And they... They're still spending that money. But Andy, the COVID-19 pandemic's over. Yes, it is. The COVID-19 pandemic is over, and yet they still have money left over that was appropriated to COVID-19, and they're still spending those money. What are they spending it on? That's the great question. We're done with the COVID-19 pandemic, and yet they still have funds allocated to that that continue to go out the bank account, and we don't know exactly what that's being spent for. So there's a new move that's going to be voted on by the Senate here soon that was put up by U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt out of the state of Missouri that has the support of multiple senators, including Roger Marshall from right here in the state of Kansas where I'm from, Tom Cotton in Arkansas, Mike Braun, Marsha Blackburn, Rick Scott, Bill Hagerty, Cynthia Loomis, Ted Budd, North Carolina, Mike Lee, Pete Ricketts from Nebraska, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, and Joni Ernst from Iowa. All of them banding together to try and push a new movement to disapprove of a resolution from the Treasury Department that's trying to redefine the original intention of the SLFRF funds. Meaning that all the programs that they had intended to sponsor and fund during the COVID-19 pandemic, they're done. They're done spending on those initiatives, those programs. We're not trying to keep businesses functional anymore. We're not trying to fund education departments or local schools or city councils or county commissions or even state governments. We're not funding any of that stuff anymore from the COVID-19 relief funding. So they still have leftover money. And instead of just turning it back around and saying, hey, thanks, let's go back into the general fund. Let's go back to actually pay down our $34 trillion of debt. We're just going to redefine what the definitions are of a disaster with the COVID-19 funding, and then we'll just supply the money elsewhere where we want to, a.k.a. Joe Biden initiatives and Joe Biden programs as he tours around the country during election season talking about investing in America. That's his campaign right now. That's his American tour right now, is the Investing in America tour, trying to tell us about all the great stuff that they're actually funding right now. And that's not okay, as COVID-19 relief funding programs have received more than $350 billion through the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, with the money designated to help state and local governments recover from the pandemic. But they still have the money. Now, again, why do we need more money? It's sad that we have to go down this road, but it's obvious because it's Democrats and it's the big government, where if you give money to a department, they're not going to relinquish it and just give it away willingly. You have to force them to not allow that. So this, by voting on this, and it's going to be tough because we probably won't be able to get this passed in the Senate with the Democrat control, but we can at least put a vote up on there to say, hey, wait a second, Treasury Department, stop spending money, because that's not okay. As they say that they have established, the recipient can get money from the funds if the cost occurred by December 31st of 2024. Let me repeat that. What they're trying to redefine with this Treasury Department slush fund, essentially, is that if you incurred damages from the COVID-19 pandemic all the way up until December 31st of this year, things that haven't even happened yet, 4 years after the pandemic, you still could qualify to receive money from the Treasury Department. I don't know how anything happening right now is still left over from COVID-19. The last industry that I know of that was like hardest hit from COVID was like the entertainment industry. Obviously, bands, comedians, artists, people that were touring around the country that have to have large venues host them and large amounts of people come to see them. That was the last one to really come back because we still weren't sure about whole gathering together in masses kind of thing. And we didn't want that to happen. So the local venues, and I know that because I talked to a lot of local venues here in the Wichita area, they were very concerned and they were having trouble trying to get back up on their feet and getting people to come back and feel comfortable about returning in masses. Now, obviously, if you go to a football game or if you go to a Black Lives Matter protest, that's totally fine, and we didn't have any issues with that. But we didn't like to be in close quarters in a venue, say, you know, jump in a mosh pit or something, which, by the way, I'm really excited about for summertime because concerts are finally being announced. But I doubt, highly doubt, that there are still, maybe I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, you can email me, hoosiermedianetwork@gmail.com. I highly doubt that there are a lot of industries today that are still being impacted by COVID-19, unless it's trying, if that's the case, that's about the only thing I can think of that's been still impacted by COVID-19, because there's still a lot of people that don't want to go back to work, or they found a way to work remotely. Or they found a way to start their home business and just kind of launch that and run with that one. So I'm not quite sure what the Treasury Department's trying to do other than spend money. And boy, are they good at doing that. And in fact, they openly admit they're still battling with inflation. The Treasury Department has openly admitted they have not been able to bring inflation down to the point that they want to. That we're printing money to the point that we don't have a backing for it so far that we're technically out of money again. They want to do raising the debt ceiling again before the end of the fiscal year, potentially. And yet we're just spending money willy-nilly through our COVID-19 slush fund. What are we doing as a federal government? Why couldn't we pay that towards the debt? Why couldn't we actually reapply that to the general fund to not have to raise the debt ceiling? Because you know the argument's going to come up again. Before September, we're going to see the argument that we have to spend more money, we have to raise the debt ceiling, and why do we have to raise a debt ceiling again? We just had this battle a year ago. We need to raise it indefinitely so government can spend as much money as humanly possible, because that's what they do. And then they're like, well, we don't know why there's such high inflation.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back in. 24 minutes past the hour. I know that I shouldn't be surprised with government wasting money and just spending. I know, because I'm hearing your thoughts through the radio waves here. Andy, this is no surprise here. That's not a story. The government wastes money. What a wild breaking headline there, right? No, I get it. But it's pretty wild when they literally just redefine their own terms so they can continue to spend what they want to. at the same time that they're investigating the private sector for trying to take advantage of these programs when they say they are appropriating the money in ways that they weren't supposed to. They were taking money by lying through the application process, which was a very simple process during COVID-19. If you remember, all you had to say was that you had X amount of employees and that you were paying them X amount, and boom, they were giving you money just for the sake of giving you money as a business. And now they're turning around and investigating you to see whether you actually did that properly while they're spending their money as essentially a slush fund to give the Joe Biden administration as much money as they want to in other programs by redefining what a COVID-19 recovery program may or may not be in certain agencies and in certain big corporations, kind of paying some off, hint, hint, wink, wink, so that way we can get some nice turnaround for campaign funds and donations, because by golly, Donald Trump is the one that's raking in record numbers of campaign funds, even while he's sitting in a courtroom that they don't like right now. So I find that just kind of intriguing. I mean, obviously the spending overhaul isn't necessarily a surprise. It's just how they continue to be the hypocrites that we already know that they are. There's another interesting story regarding the COVID-19 thing that I want to cover real quick, though. And this is
what's trending today.
This could be taking things up to another level. This could really set the tone for potential lawsuits down the road if they get voted on in the proper way. As you know, or as you may know, maybe you don't know, the company of AstraZeneca, remember, there's the three major big pharma industry companies that were doing the COVID-19 vaccines, right? There's Moderna, and there was Pfizer, and there was AstraZeneca. Those are the three major ones that were making these COVID-19 shots during the pandemic and then forcing us to choose one. And, hey, I'm Team Pfizer. I'm Team AstraZeneca. And that's what we had to go through during the last couple of years when they were forcing us to get vaccines, which, thank God, I was not getting at all from any of them. So I'm team, I don't really give a crap because I'm not supporting Big Pharma. You like that? You like that one? That's what I'm going to use as my hashtag and my t-shirt. I'm team, I don't really give a crap because I'm not supporting Big Pharma. That's my team hat that I'm going to be wearing from now on. There is AstraZeneca has officially stopped producing their COVID-19 vaccine. Right?
Say what?
I know. So why? They say that there's a slowdown in demand for the COVID-19 vaccine, which I find super fascinating because we're on booster number 42 or whatever it is now in order for us to stay healthy. And they wanted to turn this into an annual or a biannual shot when you get with your flu shot to stay healthy and protect you from a COVID-19 virus that apparently has just magically disappeared from humanity and from the biological world. So they're stopping the production. And they announced that the last week or so, but there may be something deeper to the story. Andy, what do you mean? There is a 42-year-old teacher out of the state of Utah who is suing the company of AstraZeneca for being part of a trial during 2021 for the COVID-19 vaccine that left her completely disabled and paralyzed. Now, for those that don't know, and to remind you and refresh your memory, that right now, pharmaceutical industries are immune from liability if you get harmed from the vaccine. They have immunity. You're not allowed to sue vaccine companies in Big Pharma. However, this was during a trial that she signed up for to try and help out. She said she wanted to help out with the vaccine, with the pandemic. And she became paralyzed. And the reason she's suing is because in the contract for the trial, they said, according to AstraZeneca, that they would cover the medical expenses for the trial, if there were any type of side effects that may happen. She became completely disabled and paralyzed, and AstraZeneca apparently is not covering all of the medical issues that she's had since the shots that they say has been proven that was actually from this shot, which is kind of a cause for concern. What does that mean for the lawsuits moving forward? We'll talk about that when we come back here right around the corner with Drew Allen. But I find that lawsuit extremely interesting and very important for future potential litigation.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is the post-Monday celebration as we continue to do what?
Do it live!
Each and every day. So great to have you along for the ride. You can find us on our website, HoosierReason.com, HOOSERReason.com, our social media at Hoosier Reason on all of your favorite social media sites. Yes, including the TikTok. Why? Because I like to actually have different... And actually, I don't post a lot on TikTok, but I do watch a lot of content. Very fascinating stuff. I enjoy that. Like I said, if you ever look at my threads or my, I guess, algorithm on TikTok, it's stand-up comedians and it's heavy metal bands. That's what I listen to on TikTok, and that's what I enjoy, and there's a really good way to do that. Anyways, welcome back into the show. Real quickly, and let's get our guests' thoughts on this as well as we get into our What's Trending story of the day.
What's trending today?
Happy to have back on the program. Always love chatting with him. He is author of the book America's Last Stand. He's also host of the Drew Allen Show podcast and TV program, Mr. Drew Allen himself. Drew, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, I'm good. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, always great to chat with you. All right, so I teased this going into the break, and I want to get your thoughts on this one. We're going back to the COVID-19 pandemic, as there's a lawsuit that has now been started by a teacher, 42-year-old teacher out of the state of Utah, who signed up willingly to be part of the trials and the test for the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. And under the contract that was made for her when she signed up for this trial was that if she had any side effects, that AstraZeneca would cover the cost of the medical bills of the side effects that may or may not ensue. Well, after taking it a couple days after the vaccine, apparently, according to the DailyMail.com, that she became completely disabled and permanently disabled from like the waist down or whatever it was. And apparently AstraZeneca is not fulfilling their obligation to continue with the medical coverage of being permanently disabled. And she's now suing the company of AstraZeneca. Now, it's a fascinating lawsuit to me because normally you're not allowed to create lawsuits against big pharmaceutical companies, which is their buffer, their protection, which is why we've seen so many side effects from COVID-19 vaccines from all the major companies, and yet there haven't been any lawsuits because you're not allowed to sue them. But she's not suing based on the fact that it didn't work, but the fact that they're not covering her medical cost. Drew, I want to get your thoughts on this, but my thought is here, is that this lawsuit, if she ends up winning this lawsuit, could open up the door for other potential lawsuits to work their way into the court system and show that just because you may be immune to lawsuits because you can punch out and produce whatever you want to, regardless of what the side effects may or may not be, like we saw during the COVID-19 vaccine and the pandemic, that I think that's a door to open up to actually stop that type of protections, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I would say that as an observation, it's quite interesting that the pharmaceutical companies, of course, and you can make arguments for it, why it exists, but, you know, they enjoy immunity. Yeah. And right now, of course, we have the Democrat Party that is fighting against presidential immunity when it comes to him doing his job. So I would be curious to actually get a Democrat on here and ask them how they feel about immunity for these pharmaceutical companies, if there's some consistency there. But, you know, in this case in particular, it sounds so egregious based on what we know and what's been reported, because this is a contractual agreement. I mean, this woman was harmed by this vaccine, and they even understood that there was a risk. I mean, this is what's so interesting, too, this idea that they pretend like there's no risk involved, and yet when you look at the fine print in a case like this, they obviously know there's risk because they're saying, if you're harmed, we'll cover your medical bills. I mean, there's so many ins and outs. We could do a comedy special on this. I mean, God bless the woman. I mean, nothing making fun of her, but just in terms of this kind of exposing the absurdity of this system that's in place.
Yeah. Well, they, according to AstraZeneca, they say that they're actually ending their COVID-19 vaccines because they say that there's not enough demand for them any longer, so they're going to end them. So apparently COVID-19 is gone. It disappeared from the biological world, which I find kind of fascinating as well. But they also have come out to admit that the COVID-19 vaccine that they produce as AstraZeneca can potentially create blood clot that so many people have reported from. So, it's unfortunate. And I know the Democrats are saying right now, well, Andy, Ronald Reagan's one that signed in the protections for Big Pharma. That is true. And that is one thing that I strongly disagreed with Ronald Reagan, because he is the one that implemented that. At the same time, now the politicians continue to defend this because, like you said, Drew, I mean, these big pharma industries, they're the godsend, right? They do no wrong. They do no harm. And if you question about the the positivity of a vaccine, about the results of a vaccine. If you say you may not want it because you want to do something different, then now all of a sudden you're an anti-vaxxer and the worst person on the face of the earth. And that's kind of the realm that we live in today, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is, you know, and in retrospect, hindsight is interesting because, I mean, I'm a big Reagan fan. In hindsight, that was a big mistake. You can easily understand the arguments that were made to put it in place. But, of course, none of these kinds of protections take into account eventual corruption. I mean, you know, with Operation Warp Speed and the rush to get this stuff out, we saw probably the most corrupt, I guess, form of you know, medical malpractice, if you will, abuse. In terms of the pharmaceutical industries making a windfall over a product that did not work to begin with. And it just goes to show, too, I mean, you can't really legislate morality in some ways. You know, I mean, this is kind of broad, but one of the things I've just been kind of contemplating lately is the fact that, you know, the root cause of so many of our problems, whether it's the anti-Semitism on campus, which really is just anti-Western sentiment, it's that we have been asleep at the wheel for decade after decade while we've allowed the left to remove any kind of principles and virtues and values, Judeo-Christian values, of course, from our country. And what we're left with is criminals prosecuting Trump, criminals at the pharmaceutical companies that are bribing politicians to give them windfalls. Everywhere you look, we just see a black hole in terms of people rising to power that have no principle, no virtue, and frankly, they are evil individuals.
Yeah, there's a lot of corruption going on for sure, which I'm glad you segued into that one, because the other issue going on, obviously, is the court case right now with Donald Trump. I pulled some audio. You got to listen to this. I miss hearing this on the campaign trail already, and it's already been just a few months. But there's been a lot of Republicans showing up in solidarity and supporting Donald Trump in the courtroom the last couple of days, including Speaker Mike Johnson, Byron Donalds, Donald Trump Jr., obviously, Vivek Ramaswamy, Doug Burgum. Vivek was out there making a statement outside of the courtroom earlier today, and it's kind of a long audio clip, so bear with me here, but I love it because his firebrand is amazing when he went off on these individuals.
If you tell somebody to go buy you a suit and you want to look good on television because that'll affect the voters, the way voters vote for you, you know what? They prosecute politicians if they use campaign funds to buy a suit. If they say go get a haircut, if you use campaign funds to get a haircut because you want to look good to the voters, they will actually prosecute you for using campaign funds for a personal expense. Yet the entire legal theory of this case, the whole case that Alvin Bragg has brought, depends on one premise for them to charge this as a felony, is that Donald Trump somehow should have used campaign funds to make an allegedly personal payment. Yet if he had done that, their case against him would be even stronger. This is garbage. That is the best proof that you have that if they're going to get him Cohen or get him Cumming, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. This is a sham. This is not the United States of America. This is some third-rate banana republic. If this were happening in another country, we would be laughing at them as a sham democracy. I am ashamed as an American citizen to sit here in a courtroom watching the former leader of the free world, and let's be honest, likely next leader of the free world, sitting with the indignity in this dingy third-rate courtroom with fourth-rate prosecutors and a fifth-rate lawyer on the stand as a witness, who actually is violating attorney-client privilege left and right. Nobody's even talking about that. So this is a shame, shame on the spirit in our country's history, but we will get through it and be stronger because you know who ultimately actually cast the vote on this case? It's not just the jurors in that jury box. It's every one of you at home. It's every American who votes this November to say no to the weaponization of justice.
I mean, I can't say it a whole lot better than that. I have not been following the Trump cases closely because I think it's really stupid and don't want to pay attention to it. But I think that was beautifully spoken. Your thoughts?
I mean, wow. Wow. I mean, in all honesty, powerful, articulate, passionate, you know, it's moments like that where I say, man, Vivek Ramaswamy has a really, really bright future as a leader in this country. And, you know, the longer he's out there, I think the less he can fake it, if you will, because there were concerns, obviously, about his past. But forget it. Just based on what he said there, nobody can say it better. I mean, he sums it up perfectly. And, you know, I get your sentiment, too. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, this case, it gets monotonous to cover at some point because no crime was committed. The Democrats are putting up a lying porn star and someone who's actually committed perjury before and spent time in jail in Cohen. These are their star witnesses. What we can extrapolate from this case and others, of course, is that we actually have criminals running the justice system. If you look at Fannie Willis, she's a criminal based on what she's done in her own, hiring her lover and so on and so forth with those funds. You look at Cohen, the star witness here. He's a criminal. Alvin Bragg, somebody who campaigned on getting Trump. Unbelievable. So, you know, this is what it's come to, whether it's those in the Biden administration or these, DAs and so on and so forth. They are criminals and they are going after the innocent American citizen. And it sums up exactly the problem in America right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues that we're talking with Drew Allen, the Drew Allen Show, a TV and podcast, which you can find, also author of the book America's Last Stand. We got to take a break here, Drew, so hang on the line. But when we come back, I want to continue this. And I want to look beyond not just the lawsuit, because like you said, it's a ridiculous, monotonous lawsuit where I think a lot of people are tired of hearing about it. But I want to focus on the fact that so many Republicans are actually showing up and spending hours sitting in the courtroom to protect and support Donald Trump, to show their support of unity within the Republican Party and what that means, I think, going into an election year, to show the unification of a lot of these individuals. We'll do some of that when we come back. Stay right here on The Voice of Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
What we've got here is a partisan Democrat district attorney. We have a Biden donor judge. And we have an assistant DA who was recently a top official at the Department of Justice, Biden's DOJ, and recently received over $10,000 in payments from the Democratic National Committee. The star witness here is Michael Cohen. I just listened to a few moments of his testimony this morning, and it is consistent with what he's already done. This is a man who is clearly on a mission for personal revenge and who is widely known as a witness who has trouble with the truth.
That was Speaker Mike Johnson earlier today after the court hearing, day number two of Michael Cohen being in the court case with Donald Trump. And interesting comments right now is all the Republicans showing their support for Donald Trump by showing up in the courtroom for hours on end, sitting there, including Byron Donalds and Speaker Mike Johnson and so many others, including Vivek Ramaswamy, which we played in that last segment. We're hanging out with Drew Allen right now, The Drew Allen Show. You can find on the podcast and on TV, also the author of the book America's Last Stand. Regardless of the case itself, as I mentioned, I don't really care because we already know it's a sham and it's, I don't want to waste any time on it. Do you think, Drew, this is good showing the unity of the Republicans going into an election year with so many Republicans? It's just the little things like this, just showing up and being in the background supporting Donald Trump during something like this.
Yeah, I think it is. And actually, there could have been a lot more Republicans who had showed up as well, and they missed an opportunity here. I just want to be positive and optimistic here. I don't want to be a cynic. I mean, all these individuals, even Mike Johnson, who I've had issues with the way he's conducted himself as Speaker of the House, he deserves credit here as well. This is very, very important. This is not a partisan issue for America. It's a partisan issue for Democrats who are involved in these persecutions that they're calling prosecutions. But the American people, I mean, the left, if you watch the media, MSNBC, any of that stuff, I do it for people so they don't have to suffer through it. But, you know, they are beside themselves and they cannot comprehend that this isn't working like they planned. They cannot comprehend that this is actually backfiring on Democrats. And I'm going to make a bold statement. I think that if Republicans can get their act together, if they can start to behave and think in a way like Trump does, which transcends politics and political parties, and they can really become an America First party that is at least more or less on the same page, I think that what is happening right now in the country with Biden, with this Democrat Party, with all of this, I think that we could see the beginning of the end of the Democratic Party. I firmly believe that to be true.
That would be interesting. They've been, I guess, evolving, devolving, however you want to look at it, over the past few years, where their image has really changed quite a bit. I mean, we went from the establishment mainstream, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, those kind of guys that lead the party, to the rabble-rousing outsiders like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, that have tried to hijack the party. And now we're seeing it devolve into the college students that are promoting Hamas and terrorist organizations and wanting the decimation openly of the Jewish community and Israel. It's been definitely the changing of tone for the Democrats, and I don't think they know how to handle some of this, do they?
No, and the reality is, look, we talk a lot about indoctrination, which is true and it's real. You know, the Democrats have given themselves an advantage in some ways because they've taken over the public education system and also higher level academia. But the reality is, in an economic situation like this, you know, people, once they get out of college and start raising families, for example, this is affecting them personally. So what you're seeing is a very small component of the radical left, which is, you know, very affluent children who, you know, are the sons and daughters of wealthy parents who send them to these Ivy League schools in many cases. And
who are okay, you know, shredding their diplomas when they get their diploma from their commencement ceremony, right?
yeah, exactly. So you know, in one way, I don't want to downplay what the Democrats have done to the country. I don't want to downplay the work we have ahead of us to take back the education system, because the transgender stuff, the gender theory, the critical race theory, this is going to hurt us down the road. But, I mean, I see a lot of optimism here because, you know, the bulk of the American citizenry are suffering right now and aren't the ones on these college campuses that have the quote-unquote privilege to sit here and do exactly what you just described with the diplomas. So, you know, they've really shot themselves in the foot by appealing to this radical wing of the party that's holding them hostage.
I agree. They are sabotaging themselves, and if we would actually do the right thing and unite on the Republican side, we could just watch them self-destruct, and it would be really fun to watch. But that takes the Republicans to do that. It is America's Last Stand. Go check out the book on Amazon, other places, also The Drew Allen Show. Drew, it's always good to talk to you, brother. Let's do it again real soon.
Hey, thank you.
Always a pleasure. That's it for today. Back at it again tomorrow for the middle of the week. Until then, be your own voice of reason. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.